Session number 20459, Reel 9.
Captain Spencer, Reel 9. You were saying that you had an O group while you were out of the line.
Yes, the O groups were fairly frequently called before any advance or was taken place. It would depend on which companies were to be involved as to who, how many people attended the Oak Group. But in this particular occasion, I think, as a general, we were told what the particular plans were. I mean, we were used to this sort of thing, as sort of say, because we'd come out of the line, the Bedfords had gone through, or the Surreys had gone through, we came in again. But contact had been lost at this time, and we were told that we were going to be reduced to this point and that place, and then we were going to head for Forley, and at the particular time my last instruction was that I was to go over over the river Ronco to an isolated farmhouse and so forth.
Was this to be a reconnaissance again?
Yes, to do a reconnaissance, which was something I was quite often do. Mm. This again was in daylight. Well, we got to some high ground just before the River Ronco, and there was immediately evidence that the contact with the enemy had been made, because firing took place, we'd received some casualties, the bridge that we were going to cross had been blown up, tanks had been, I can't remember seeing the tank, but I know that a tank was called up and was going to go over the particular river, but it was hit by a fire and was knocked out before you could get across the river. And the idea, I think, was that A and C companies were to go over the river, D company was to come last, and then I was to do the last patrol to look at the farmhouse. Well, at this subsequent O group, I did point out to Major Harding that the whole object of the exercise surely had been achieved. We had made contact with the enemy, and I would have thought that before we carry out the rest of the exercise, maybe another plan should be drawn up, with thinking of supporting artillery fire and, you know, a proper disposition of the troops. However, he and I said, on my patrol, how he said, well, are you refusing to obey orders? I said, not in anywhere. I just thought, you know, what's the practical thing to do? The two companies under Notley and Rutledge then were crossing the river and had come against opposition at a couple of farmhouses there. Not much that I knew about at that time, but certainly there's plenty of evidence of the fairly heavy firing. I knew they were being what's going. We had filed our way down, or made our way down to the river crossing, which was, the bridge was mostly submerged. You had to go across the various girders to it.
It had been blown.
But it had been blown before we got there. And people were sort of all crowding there and not proceeding any further. So I left my platoon there, made my way across the bridge by myself, found Notley in a ditch and said, oh, we're coming against heavy opposition and so forth. And he had the radio with him. I went into the nearest farmhouse and there were a whole crowd of our troops there and about 8 German prisoners.
Inside the building?
Inside the building. They had been disarmed. But it was sort of rather like a sort of family group. They're all swapping photographs and what's her name, and although the firing had ceased then, it was obviously a rather an insecure position. Where the rest of the Germans were, I didn't know. So I made the people get out of the house and forbid them and try to get the Germans organized to take back, and certainly under Garber not to chat too happily. I then went up to the next farmhouse, and again the same situation. There were a lot of people within the building instead of being outside guarding the perimeter. And while I was there to prove the point, an armor-piercing shell, obviously from a tank, came through one of the buildings and took somebody's head off while he was there, which did help to clear the room a little bit. So I made them all... I can't think that I didn't come across many of the other. I believe Risden was there, and a fellow called Vella was there, I think. But I didn't come across them. I just came across, you know, these people. So I insisted, and I went back to get my own platoon, forced the rest of the people up to report to their officers or to Notley or so-and-so.
What was the ground like on the...
Well, it was
side?
A fairly... It was a hilly country, very... very muddy. It had been very wet at this particular stage, but it was a narrow lane of sort of high banks either side, woody in places, but quite a bit of open territory beyond the farm. There were fields beyond the farm.
This is beyond the bridge, so there's a lane leading.
Yes, lane leading past one farm building and about another 100 yards up to the second building.
Any sign of any locals around?
No, nobody, any locals at all. I then brought my people up, and I had already selected a five-man patrol group. And I think one of them was called Dyke, and I can't remember the names of them. And so we were going to proceed to this farmhouse. But we waited until it was dark. During this time, I think there was only very sporadic firing from the enemy, and it was very difficult to appreciate as to what the strength of it was.
Did you know where they were, approximately?
Well, approximately, yes. So you could see, I mean, sometimes that forms of tracer had come, so we knew that...
You knew the direction of the...
We knew the direction, I mean, and a variety of directions. The whole of the front, obviously, was quite well occupied.
But when you found these chaps in the farmhouses, were they at platoon strength or less?
Well, there were two companies
spread
out there. So it's more than... I wouldn't say that more than necessarily two platoons were in one building, but they were too concentrated in order to provide a proper perimeter for defence.
And too vulnerable as well.
And too vulnerable. And there was evidence and sounds that tanks were in the area, because we could hear the movements. And already a shell had come through the building. I hadn't been for that. The evening was closing in then, but I wanted it. The question of the hours of darkness is rather important from a patrol point of view. So I wanted to get my men out when it really got dark, because we had possibly almost a mile to cover.
To the next farmhouse. What was between you? What was between your front line farmhouse and the next one, the one that was your patrol objective? Was it open ground?
Yes, it was a lot of open ground with sort of a field, so that there was a ditch and maybe a bit of a hedgerow.
Yes.
In to proceed. So there was a road to our right, a lane to our right, but otherwise it was pretty open ground.
Were there standing crops in the fields, do you remember?
I can't remember anything of any consequence. That I think that if there had been crops there, they had already been cropped, I think.
Oh, it was October, wasn't it?
Yes.
More likely been harvested already.
Yeah, so I can't remember. It certainly wasn't of anything high. And I can't honestly remember whether there were any cabbages there. Situation was that we got so far, and even though it was certainly still dark, I must have gone off a little later, but firing broke out, and I told the chap with me to go back and make sure where the other people were, because that I wanted to see whether we could get any closer to this building or not. He came forward and said, "Oh, you know, they're about." For some reason, I didn't quite believe that he'd gone that far enough where these people were. Because of this firing, I wanted to check that they hadn't been in any way wounded or anything else. So again, I did a circular route to try and chase them, but I couldn't find them anywhere at all. And we were by then quite close to the farmhouse, but there was the field narrowed at this particular point, and there was obviously a ditch where I could see activity of the Germans, and the light was beginning to break.
So and this was coming up for first light then? You'd been out all night?
Been at that time, one way, yes, or now.
Yeah.
And mainly looking for these, where the people were, because I told him to go back to the farmhouse, and he said no, they hadn't returned, but I don't think he'd gone back with us, so I still thought they were out. Mm. And at that particular time, while we were there, I saw various grenades coming out from the ditch, which we were very close, a matter of, 10, 15, 20 yards from. So I told this chap to go, instead of running back, because we've got an open field behind us, is to go forward over the ditch, and that he should fire to the left and I should fire to the right. And there was a place in the building straight ahead, so we did that. We dashed forward and we disappeared from the people, anybody watching us. All these grenades were going off behind us. But I felt it was the safest way to go.
It was just you and one other chap then charging a trench.
We charged over this narrow trench with people in it and fired both sides, got to the wall of the farmhouse. I threw a grenade through the glass window and ran round the back of the house. I then dressed about 50 to 100 yards past the farmhouse and then came back to go over the ditch. And I said, right, when we go this, you far to the left and I'll far to the right. And we'd already could see very vaguely that sort of 50 yards away there was looked like a ditch. It wasn't in actual fact, it was just a large furrow.
Yes.
So we ran there, and firing broke out, and we fell down into the furrow. But then daylight was definitely starting to come out, so that we still got too far to go to any form of colour, so I suggested that we crawl along this furrow to where there was a hedge, which was pretty filthy work, but at least nobody had saw us, because no more firing came at us there. We got to the hedge, and as we were getting close to it, a tank had gone past down the side of the watchman, and I still couldn't go to the right because we're in view, so I tried to inveigle my way through the hedge, and again difficult to bring my gun with me. And as I got my head through the hedge, I noticed that I was looking at a boot. And I looked up, and there was this German with his rifle in his hand. And he looked down and saw me, and instinctively pulled the trigger, which hit a stone. My mouth was open with horror, and the chip of the stone went in and cut my gum. And I was saying, now, hold on, you know, steady on this, that, and the other. Trying to talk to him to keep him calm. And I still couldn't bring my gun completely through the watchstone. So,
what kind of hedge was it?
Well, it was a thorn hedge or something, you know, very thick.
Blackthorn or something of
that
sort?
Well, something of that nature. But, I mean, it was difficult in getting through. But I'd hoped there was a ditch running down the other side, and I was away from there.
Yes.
I tried to kick back at the chap following behind me to let him stay there. But he insisted on coming through anyway, you see. And we came through, obviously left the gun here, but I had a grenade in each pocket, which he didn't search then. So he...
Was it just the one German on his own?
Well, the one German to start with, and then two other Germans came from the other side of the ditch, and I didn't see them. I was like that. And so yes. I think there were actually four were there before we'd both come through.
So you just ran into them by accident?
Well, yes, I was just putting my head through the hedge. They were obviously coming down on prior to an attack on the farmhouse, where we'd come from. And a tank had already gone down the road anyway, and there were sounds of other tanks about. But unfortunately, we were then escorted back to the farmhouse, where I'd thrown a grenade through the window, and they were lying about tending their wounded. And I got a couple of grenades in my pocket, so I wasn't feeling very happy on the reception that I might have got. But however, they did no more. There was shouting from obviously a sergeant or somewhere, and we were then escorted down the road to where we were later interrogated.
How did they treat you in that first phase of captivity?
Again, I found that. That on average, I think that as we treated, there's a reasonable respect between the people actually involved in the fighting. And I certainly was extremely nervous, because if they'd discovered the grenades on me at that stage, they might have related the injuries of their comrades to us or me. And I wouldn't then have unnecessarily blamed them if they had taken some retaliatory action.
How many wounded were there in there?
Well, I would say there were six or seven, possibly, that had some. But they may have been wounded from other fire, although, as far as I'm concerned, the fire from our own troops, the farmhouse had left, was negligible. But obviously, while all this was taking place, the farmhouse where I had left it had been taken by the Germans with the tanks and everything else.
They put in a counterattack.
And virtually half of the two companies or more were obviously taken prisoner at this time, because by the time we got to we were herded near a big farmhouse, and we're outside by a barn, and there must have been 15 to 20 people from the companies, not of my own men, because they had never been left behind anyway, although a number of them were taken prisoner. And there was an English-speaking German officer that was asking the question. And I said, hold on, you know, all you have to do is give your name, rank, and number, and don't give them any information at all. And the officer then said, well, you know, because we didn't have any signs of rank at all in those days, because we didn't. So, you know, who are you? And one of the blokes said, oh, he's an officer. So I was then separated from the other. And
what sort of questions was this German asking them before you managed
well,
to
you
shut
know,
them
what,
up?
Well, you know, what is your... Well, I think he said, what is your regiment? You know, have you know, things like that. How many, you know, is there any other regiments about? Or he was asking pertinent questions as to who they were in a very friendly manner, but, you know, the war's over, you lot, and that sort of thing.
He didn't say for you the war is over, did he?
No, to me. But when I then was taken in to a building, I didn't see either Notley or out, but I was taken into an office with fairly luxuriously fitted with another English-speaking German officer who got up and said, you know, hello, you know, you're right, and so forth and so on. You know, do take a seat. I mean, I was absolutely covered in mud, as you can imagine, that time. Do have a cigarette. He opened up this silver cigarette case, and I took a handful and put it in my top left-hand pocket, which, unfortunately, because it was so wet, they completely disintegrated still, and just let one. And he then sort of, you know, I said, well, you speak very good English. He said, well, I was several years in London, and you know so-and-so, and that restaurant, and so forth, and all a very nice, pleasant chat. And he said, well, you know, what unit are you with? And I said, well, I can't give you that, you know that, you know, my name is so-and-so, my rank is so-and-so. But he said, what is a tank officer doing here? Because I was the only person in the whole regiment that had a black beret.
Distinguishing mark.
So I said, well, it just so I borrowed it from somebody, I said, you know, because my head was cold or something. And anyway, the questions got more arrogantly asked and so-and-so, you know, well, you'll have to tell me this, that, and the other, and this, that, and so forth. Anyway, it got a bit nasty.
Did he threaten you physically?
Well, only by inference. There was nothing so-and-so. But then he said, well, that's it. I'm afraid I've had enough, and so-and-so. So-and-so. And I thought, Christ, he's going to order this. And he shouted at him in German, and this bloke came and yanked me up, and I thought, God, this is it, you know, maybe I should say something now. And really was quite concerned, because I didn't know where they were going to take me. But anyway, the bloke, having got out of his office, the soldier was quite rough and so on. So as soon as we got out of the office, he became a little more pleasant and shouted, you know, right over there, you go over there. And I sort of walked away looking behind me, make sure he wasn't aiming anything at me, to join other people there, so that instead of being shot or anything else, it was there. And in a short space of time, we, as Notley has described, we were taken in front of General Hoppe. I think David Rutledge, John Notley, myself, and I think a fellow called Valor, or I can't remember what his name was. But we protested to the general that Notley was wounded and should receive attention and everything else.
Had David Rutledge and John Notley had the same sort of interrogation as you?
Apparently
had
not.
No.
Apparently not. No, as far as I know, not. But the thing that was annoying is that the General Hoppe then said, well, of course, you're members of the Duke of Cornwall Light Infantry, you know, this, so that somebody had given them all the information anyway, which is having sort of, I thought, you know, been nearly threatened with death. And they knew everything anyway. It was a bit unfair.
Could it be that what they were worried about was the possibility that there was armour in the vicinity, it was going to be committed?
Possibly. But
that might have attracted the special attention to you.
Well, possibly to a certain extent. But, I mean, he did mention that, you know, which I said, no, I've nothing to do with that. Anyway, this isn't, as you know very well, this isn't the country for tanks anyway, so forth and so on. But the interrogator was sufficiently fierce for me to be quite concerned. Let's put it that way.
What you mentioned, you didn't wear any distinguishing marks of rank in the field. Presumably the NCOs wore their chevrons.
No.
They didn't?
No. Not on the whole.
Not on the whole. What about regimental badges. Presumably those are not worn either, if you're concealing.
Well, that to a great extent, that I can't remember seeing any badges there. But I'm quite sure that one or two might well have still supported their badges. But
yes.
It was the we were told that snipers pick out officers anyway, so it was mainly the ranks, officers' ranks. I think possibly the sergeants might have had some distinguishing mark.
Yes.
In fact, I'm sure that they did, but it was everybody was known for what they are, so you didn't have to wear a badge to prove your authority. We were then, I think, herded. I don't know that it was. Oh yes, there were some other officers from other regiments who had been taken along the line, including some officers from the KRRs, the King's Royal Rifles, a very nice chap whose name eludes me now. But we saw each other after the war. So that this had been obviously a successful counterattack by the Germans over quite an area, which is why, again, I was so fed up with landing ourselves in the situation, which I thought was totally unnecessary. We should have stayed the other side of the river. We were then herded into officers and men into three tunners or the equivalent, where we had to stand up and crowded together. Luckily, it was so crowded you couldn't really fall over because it was so crowded. And we were motoring, obviously, up Italy. We had one stop beside the road. Another time we went into a farm building and we were in the outside barns. I think overnight, I teamed up with a chap called Ian Mollison from the KRRs, and we thought, well, we don't particularly want, we're going in the wrong direction. So we were investigating any possible avenue of escape from the building, but it was very well guarded, and there were troops within the building itself, so we didn't see much chance of that.
Was this convoy of trucks closely escorted when you were on the move?
There were armed troops in each vehicle. There were armed people in front, and there were vehicles with purely troops in them, interspersed amongst the others. I can't remember. I think we had some coffee and bread along the line until we got to a place called Montava, where it was a single story building, suitably fenced in with high barbed wire and everything, all the rest of it. There must have been several hundred of mixed troops there. And again, Ian and I made an immediate inspection of the camp to see, you know, looking at the guard posts and testing the wire and opening up a few drain holes to see whether there was nice big drains underneath. But nothing. But one of the things I do remember about it was while we were there, some food parcels arrived. And it was quite an amazing sight to see a half-pound pat of butter being dissected with infinite careness into sort of 16 pieces or something. Or anything.